working with the local church to take the hope of Christ to every student in the United States. This is First Priority. Now here are your hosts, Steve Cherico and Brad Skelling.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. My name is Steve Cherico, and I am here with my friend, co-worker, and all things Brad Skelling. How you doing, Brad?
You forgot the word mentee.
Well, I didn't touch that. Left it alone, buddy.
Since those of us who are on YouTube watching saw Rachel shaking her head back and forth as you introed, it's because we were bantering like milliseconds before you went jumped
poor
in.
Poor Tayana and all her editing for our podcast vidcast. Poor Tayana. Gosh. Well, Brad, what do we got going on? We got some announcements this week, don't we?
We do. First Priority Scholarships, it has been amazing. Not only were, you know, the number of scholarships this year exponentially higher, the dollar amounts are higher, the applications are rolling in, but I guess I'll say it, not that everybody plays the lottery, but you got better chances here than you do with the lottery. So sign up, students who are graduating seniors. Get your name in the hat. Tell us about who you are, where you are, your First Priority leadership journey, and we'll make 11 lives a little bit better here in May.
It's going to be good. It's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Add to that you've got spring meeting registration going on. Is that still alive and open, sir?
That is alive and open. That was what we were bantering about, that I don't know what's going on anymore. Before we got on here, but that is coming to a close here shortly. But yes, correct. We've got a spring meeting in Decatur, Alabama. We've got one in South Florida. And for those of you who are running traction, we are doing a spring meeting in Nashville. It's pretty much a traction annual meeting where we're going to set goals, set quarterly rocks. I mean, go through the nitty gritty of traction. So if you do traction or if you're interested, feel free to join us for the Nashville meeting. We'll go through that, but we've got some good crowds coming to the other two. All three of them are going to be great conversations, relationships, all of those things. So, yeah.
Really good. And then I'll throw one out there. Those of you who are in the Dallas, Fort Worth area, those of you who are in the Orlando, South Florida area, those of you who are in the Nashville, greater Middle Tennessee area, we've got YPS coming up very quickly in April.
Youth Pastor Summit.
Yeah, so just be aware that is going on. You've got some thanks to your team, Brad, for sending out info about that this past week. That was awesome. But that's a great refresher in the midst of things like spring meetings. It's a great opportunity to invest into your campus coaches and your youth pastors that are bought in.
And if you are, youth pastors, it's just a great time for refreshing, but we'll have booths at all of those. You'll get to meet other First Priority people from around the country at each one of those. And I think at Nashville, we're going to record a few podcasts. So if you're a club coach or whatever your role is with First Priority, we would love to meet you and interview you at the Nashville YPS. I'm opening us up for a load of busyness while we're there, but it should be a good time.
It is. 100% it is. And before we jump into Rachel life and talking about our guest today, I thought I'd also just celebrate for a minute with a story. And it's a broad story, but you and I have been around this for a long time. And April, May is usually a wind down time. It's usually a start to bring things to a close time. And I don't know if you are watching this, but I am watching an incredible amount of networks being birthed, clubs launching so that they can be ready to go in the fall. Pastors and youth pastors hearing about First Priority and saying, how did I not get involved all school year? I'm going to send my kids. Like, there's an unbelievable amount of students that are still hungry to be on their campus and represent the gospel, and adults who are learning about it. So just want to celebrate that on a broad thing. I was on a call the other day, and guy was like, hey, I thought I saw a number of over 1,000 schools. And I was like, yeah, let me tell you where that number was at the beginning of the school year and where it is at January 1st and where it is now on April 1st. It was quite mind-boggling how much growth. And you know, we're sitting here with Rachel. We're going to again introduce her in a minute. She was just talking about networks she's picking up. It's stinking April. You don't pick up networks in April. What's wrong with you, right?
So I blame your team for that, because I saw a new club launch probably 10 miles down the road from where I'm sitting right now, and an interest meeting a half a mile from where I'm sitting right now. So your team is going after it. They're not saying, hey, let's wait until this fall. They keep working. And everybody, yeah, we're up to, last I saw, 1,026 clubs, over 8,000 people indicated a new walk with Jesus.
Come on, Jesus.
This year.
Let's go.
And,
come on.
So God's doing some pretty cool things. And I fully blame Jesus. I mean, we can yep. say that it's our teams and it's the people and we're going after it. But I mean, yep. God's just opening the door. It feels like a Holy Spirit wave of excitement, hunger, all the adjectives that you can put with that. And we're just walking through doors that are open, which Rachel will probably tell us about here shortly.
So. Well, we've said her name a dozen times. Those of you who are watching on YouTube, watching the vidcast, you can see Rachel in the background. Brad, go ahead and introduce your friend and let's talk.
Well, Rachel is a good friend. We can genuinely say that. We talk often, strategy. We talk ministry. We talk life. It is just a good time hanging out with Rachel. I still call her Camarota every once in a while, but it is Gardner. And one of the best things, is when we talk is the fact that she says, hey, my staff walked in the office and you were talking about me again on the podcast and well, I got to go listen. And so I was like, well, we just need to have her on the podcast rather than talking about her on the podcast. So Rachel, thanks for joining us today. For those of you who everybody knows you, because we talk about you all the time, but introduce yourself, tell everybody who you are, where you are, how your name changed, all those kind of things.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be here. And it really is, every time I walk in my office, they're like, did you listen to the podcast today? Whether you're talking about me fighting people over chicken or, you know, whatever it is that week, it's so
things.
Much fun.
Uh-huh.
I'm Rachel Gardner now. I am in North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina. I can't say Johnston County anymore because we're growing into a few different areas. But I am married to my husband, Adam. We are expecting our first child, a little boy. And so we are really excited for that in August. Just building that first priority team, one kid at a time.
Future student leader.
That's right. I'm like, you don't get a choice. Sorry. It's predestined. But I started here as a high school English teacher, which we're going to talk about, and fell in love with reaching that campus with the gospel. And then First Priority opened up a whole new avenue. I had felt God calling me to reach more students than just what was at my school locally. Didn't know how to do that. I just knew that that's what he wanted me to do. And First Priority came along and they're like, hey, you love Jesus. We love Jesus. Come hang out. And I fell in love with it. Seeing students being equipped to share the gospel with their generation.
Yep.
I don't think I'll ever get over that first meeting, walking in and going, who's leading this? How's it organized? It's students who can't turn their homework in on time, but they have organized this whole club and they have done it better than any adult I know. So just fell in love with it. I'm going on 5 years now. Everybody's like, what's your long-term plan to just keep doing this as long as God would allow me to keep doing this?
Yeah. Well, when I talk about First Priority and, you know, it's a tool, right? First Priority is a tool for students to share the gospel. But when we talk about people like you, Rachel, Shane and Natalie Kenny come to mind, natural born gospel focused, you know, evangelists is how I describe Shane and Natalie, you know, that First Priority is that tool that just helps them to do more evangelism, right? I think of you in the same light. You were a teacher, which we want to talk about today, but gospel was in your mouth, on your lips, words, right? That just follow who you are. You know, talk about being a teacher. Tell that story a little bit more. And yeah, what was that opportunity like?
Yeah, I just call it my hardest mission field I've ever been a part of, by far, is teaching on the public campus. The hardest mission I've ever been a part of. Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, just easy, fun and easy compared to that. But so I graduated from Liberty, majored in English, kind of minored in some nursing, really had just met the Lord before going into Liberty. And so my heart was just, God, I want to serve you. Tell me where to serve you. And so trying to iron that out. And I get out and I tried to work for a local church and it just didn't fit my giftings. Sitting behind a computer, I had just people in my office all the time wanting to hear about Jesus and my testimony, which is crazy. And I was like, I don't think I'm supposed to sit behind a desk. Mm. And so I was like, God, put me to use, you know, make me a servant. He was like, go teach high school. And I was like, anything else? I didn't even have a great high school experience. So yeah. Anything else. And that's where he led me. And so I started interviewing at local high schools and I had come prepared, you know, like I joke that my face was like photoshopped in an apple on my resume. Like I was ready. Like I had everything laid out. And I remember sitting at this specific school in this interview, very nervous. It was a huge school and obviously beginning teacher. And the only question that I hadn't prepared for was why I wanted to be a teacher. Mm. And that is the first question that this administrator asked me, why do you want to teach? And out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And I very ignorantly said, I want to reach your campus for the gospel. And then I thought, I'm not getting this job. I'm not getting this job. Right. And he stood up and said, which classroom do you want? And I said, the one with the windows. And that's how I became a high school English teacher. Wow. So
wow.
Just that in and of itself was clear to me that God had me right where he wanted me. And had no clue what I was doing. Hardest job I've ever done. Didn't realize how desperate the school environment was. Even just from coming from where I was in high school, you know, back in 2010, 2012 to coming back to 2017 and 18, it was a very, very dark place. Lots of confusion, lots of desperation, lots of anxiety.
Yep.
This was pre-COVID, so I can't imagine what it's like now, but just realizing the desperate situation that those students were in and realizing, my coworkers, I would say, how anti-Christian a lot of my coworkers were. Like, I remember one time I just had my Bible open on my desk while I was teaching just because I'd been reading it that morning. And, a teacher came in and said, you can't have that on your desk. You can't talk about Jesus. You can't pray about Jesus. Like, you have certain rules. And I said, well, if that's the case, then I don't really have to, I'll just live like him. Like, that's just what it'll speak for itself. And, God really covered me with that. Like, I had students coming up to me all the time and they didn't realize that they were asking, you know, the reason, why do you believe the way you believe and why do you act the way you act? But the way they would ask it is, why are you happy? That was new to them. They were like, our teachers don't look like they like their jobs. Our parents are miserable. We go home. Yep. Our coaches are miserable. Our friends are miserable. But you come in every day and there's just a sense of joy. And that's where I got to just share with them, hey, my emotions and stuff fluctuate too. I have good days and bad days. I have days I don't want to be here. But I am on a firm foundation and that doesn't ever change. And so when circumstances change, he doesn't. And just seeing them, you know, come to life for the first time and, oh, that's who Jesus is. I didn't realize that's who Jesus was. And the deep cultural misunderstanding of who Christ is, and how we are supposed to fix that. So I think you guys know the story. I got invited as the teacher to the First Priority to share my testimony. And really didn't know anything much about First Priority or the legalities around teaching, but I got up there and I started sharing to an auditorium of like 200 students. And, I felt like God said, do an altar call, which at the time, everybody in the back, you know, Joel and his crew, they're like, I'm like, I'm going to do it. I'm doing an altar call. So I think that's when I decided in my heart, there was more to be done than what I was doing at that time. Mm. And I opened it up and I said, hey, if this was your story, if you resonated with any part of this, you know, feeling abandoned and insecure and scared, Christ is here for you and he loves you. He's crazy about you. And so if you want to accept him, I just invite you right now to say the prayer after me. And before you know it, hands are going up. 15, 20 students have accepted Jesus and I'm running through the hallways like, oh, we just had revival in the auditorium. And it wasn't until like the next day that they were like, yeah, you can't ever do that again. So don't ever do that again. So.
Yep. Yep. Lesson learned, right?
That sums up my experience. Lesson learned.
Yep. Nice. Nice. What do you tell your teachers now when they're either new or experienced? Let's talk about that. We'll go from one end of the spectrum to the other very quickly.
That's hard because, you know, personally, my belief is that I know who provides for me. So yep. I know who puts the money in my bank account. I know who puts the food on my table. And so I went into teaching knowing if I risk it all for the name of Jesus, then it will be worth it and I will not go hungry, sure, because that's what he promised me. Yep. However, I was single at the time and didn't have kids. And so I have a lot of empathy for teachers who have, they have a family to provide for and they want to make this their career for 40 years. And so I just kind of tell them that it's up to their personal convictions, that you have to get with the Lord, you have to get alone with the Lord, and you have to determine what he's asking you to do here on this mission field. And we will support you and champion you. I can't necessarily say now, looking back with a little more wisdom and a lot more opposition this year, that I would probably do the things the way that I did them that time. Yep. It was really ignorance and the Lord's faithfulness that kept me there. I should have been fired 100%. So just, I wouldn't say I'd encourage that. I'd say do what you're personally convicted to do and know that at the end of the day, the state, the local government, that school does not ultimately provide for you. And so if he's asking you to risk it, you have to risk it. Hmm. And he takes care of you. He really does. I mean, he opened up this job probably before I would get fired or sued or who knows what else.
Sure. Yeah. So it's always a fun conversation. walking through, because I've seen some people too that say, well, God called me to do this or told me to, in your situation, do an altar call. And from where I'm sitting, I'm like, I'm not sure that was God. That might have been your pride getting in the way of what God really wanted to do in the lives of students, right? I see that probably more in youth pastors than teachers, not to lump. I'm making a broad generalization, right? That generalizations aren't good. I don't like them, but I just made one. Where teachers are more scared and timid and shy and say, we have separation of church and state and we can't do anything, which we all know that teachers can do something. They can open their classroom. They can resource the kids and the custodial role that happens in there, right? And that's where to me, the gentleness of the Spirit says, there's that middle ground that it's not about me. It is about the kingdom. And let's take the laborers that are many in the school who consider themselves followers of Christ and empower them. Right. So,
Well, Brad, you're talking about the misinformation that teachers don't have currently when it comes to the gospel. And I think that's where Rachel was about to go. Right. It's one of the things that happens in the school setting is, I mean, let's even pick on Liberty for a minute. And that's a fantastic school. Are teachers taught their rights, right? Do they know? Well, no, they don't. And so that's one of the things that First Party gets to do is it gets to, as Rachel, again, I think you were about to say, is that we get to resource teachers and help them understand, hey, here are your rights. Here's how this game actually works. And if you have an administrator versus fighting them, you get to look at them and say, actually, I do think we don't understand each other's rights clearly. So let's go ahead and get to the legality of it, right? And we begin to, instead of being in an argument with them, just say, maybe we can get to the bottom line of what the rights are. That makes Rachel an expert and probably even somebody they trust because she was once a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say that, Steve, that I think the misinformation around our rights and students' rights on campuses, you know, as we've been facing what we've walked through this past year as a local chapter, I've really had to get even better acquainted with our rights. And we have a lot more rights than we think we do. But I do think it's knowing those rights and then where that meets the character of Christ on campus. I'm not walking around deliberately trying to hurt people or make administrators' jobs harder. We want to build your campus into something better. We want to serve you. Yep. And so that's the heart that we come in with. And my admin after that year had to call me in the office and say, hey, you got to quiet it down a little bit. We've got some feedback from, the local office. And I totally respected that. That was completely something I would respect. And we want those admins to be served as well. But then the second thing is, I told you about my mountaintop experiences, the auditorium and all of that. What really changed the game for me there was relationships with those students. Hmm. Simply them knowing that I cared. And I think that I was who I said I was. That changed the game for their parents. That changed the game for my admin, my peers. Oh, she's not here to make us feel guilty or condemned, or she's not here to cause a lot of trouble. She's genuinely in love with Jesus Christ. That's going to come out of her life just as it would if somebody wasn't.
Yep.
And we can model that in those day-to-day relationships with those students. Hey, how's your family? It was the knowing students were hungry and I had a food pantry in my classroom because we're called to feed the hungry, and seeing students who maybe didn't have lunch money or Thanksgiving and getting my teachers together and saying, hey, let's bring their family Thanksgiving meal. It was those moments that I think spoke more for Jesus than the auditorium moments did.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, and some of it, one of the other things that I like to talk about is when you're in the school setting, you got to know the spiritual climate. You talk about being a dark place, but they're still comfortable, right? We're comfortable in our darkness oftentimes, and we aren't aware of where we are. And especially for those people who, you know, have never heard the good news of Jesus, right? They hear the political Jesus, or they hear a curse word Jesus, or all the other things, not the Savior Messiah Jesus. And so in a school setting, they're comfortable, and you don't need a comforter when you're comfortable, and the Holy Spirit is called the comforter. And so we're not called to the school campus as ministry types until there is the bad thing that happens, right? We're not aware of our spiritual dryness until the depression overcomes us and somebody commits suicide. And then the pastors and ministry people are called to the school rather than, when we're comfortable. When we're comfortable, we are going to get in trouble more quickly when we talk about Jesus at the school. But
I'd say they're comfortable, but they're searching. That was my experience. They were looking everywhere. They just didn't know what they were looking for, you know, validation on social media and popularity. And I got to get in the best college and make the best grades and fit on the best sports team. A lot of them felt pressure. I got to be the best for my parents. You know, they're going through a lot. And so I saw the comfort of where they are and where they probably needed to be. But I also saw them desperately searching. And I just happened to have the answer of, you know, I was that high school student searching, and none of that worked for me. I tried all of it. I tried the sports and the education and the grades and all of that, the relationships, none of it worked. And so just being able to tell them my story, that's who I was. I was lost and then I was found, you know, I was dead and now I'm alive. And that made the biggest difference, I think, in there, was knowing that they're searching. They're still searching desperately, wildly. And we just happen to know who they're searching for.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, and you just hit on a really key point, which I think is just crucial to who you are and what you do for a living right now. And that is, when students approach a teacher, the whole game changes, right? Because the minute they approach a teacher and say, all right, why do you have joy? Why do you have a food pantry? Why do you care about people's families? It opens up the right to talk about all of the things that you're wanting to burst open and talk about, but you're trying to be legally sound. You're trying to be of good character, right? And so helping teachers understand what you pray for, what you look for, you will find, right? You ask the Lord to open up doors, and then you walk in commitment to walking out the state's laws. You'll find ways to share the gospel. And so it's probably a neat, and I'm sure you have some moments, but it's probably a neat moment for you to be able to reflect on that as you are helping teachers in the midst of the chaos it is to be a high school and middle school teacher right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just like you said, like, they would ask me questions. I wasn't walking through the hallways with an I love Jesus, you're going to hell t-shirt on, you know, like, it just wasn't, I wasn't that way. I was very much walking. Probably, it probably is.
Oh boy, we got to stop that one.
But I was, you know, just a regular teacher, just trying to do my job and teach them English and teach them something that I loved. Learning and reading and writing are so important to me. And it just so happened that they noticed something different. I wasn't trying too hard. I'm not praying over people in the hallways. I mean, they just were like, something's different about this corner of the school. Something's different about you when you approach us. You seem like you care. Or even when they come up to you with their own home situations and you get to say, hey, you know, tell me more about that, because I've been in a rough home, or I know somebody who came from that. And I had so many students, you know, end up getting plugged into churches locally because they were like, this just isn't the Jesus that I thought he was going to be when we encountered him. But you're exactly right. When you look for those opportunities, they're there. And I think that's where the trust in God comes in, is if he opens that door and says, I need you to walk through this in faith and in obedience. And you say, okay, I trust you enough that I'll walk through this door and answer this question or have this conversation or maybe pray with a student. it's really funny. Our social media and marketing manager right now, Kenzie Keel, is phenomenal. And I met her as a student. And the crazy story, just to further your example, Steve, is that she was in my classroom day one, freshman, very, very nervous. But she kind of stuck out to me. I was sharing a little bit about how I became a teacher. I was trying to get them to understand who I was before I started teaching them. And she was just hanging on every word. And then I noticed she didn't come back day two or day three. And so I just reached out to her friends and her mom and said, hey, where's Kenzie? We've missed her. I noticed she wasn't here. And she said, well, she struggles with severe anxiety. And, you know, it was an honors class. And so she has some pressure of the curriculum. I said, well, if you'll send her back to school tomorrow, I think I can help with that. And just ended up talking to her. And she said, you know, I believe in Jesus. And she shared that. And I said, well, me too. So let's pray about it. And, you know, 5-6 years later, she's serving on our staff as our social media and marketing manager. And just a testimony to what you do in those opportunities, what can happen when you're obedient there.
Yep. Well, talk to us about that. Obviously you're not a teacher anymore. So let's step out of that mode for a moment. Tell us, how long ago you became the executive director of First Party in Johnston County. And it's been a journey, but God has the Johnson County saturated and starting to walk into more places. So where are you now? I guess the questions that ring, where are you now? What's that journey been like? And maybe what's the hardest thing that you had to go through to get to where you are right now? And
plenty of that. So I started, I want to say summer of 2019, right before the pandemic hit. You know, my predecessor, Joel, came into my classroom one day and said, you're supposed to have my job. And I was like, I don't know if nonprofits hyphenated or not. I don't know the nonprofit world. I think I'm good here. And then he got me an interview with the board and I thought I blew it and they loved me. And so another, that's what the Lord does. So, started in 2019, I'll say just very honestly, my first 6 months to a year was I was my own biggest enemy. I was insecure. I had never been in full-time ministry as an occupation. I was very unfamiliar with the nonprofit territory. You know, I was just out here, I would say, evangelizing. That's what I wanted to do. And so to put that into a professional environment and to say, you can do that now, but you have to do that within these bounds and these limits and help other people do that. I felt I was my own biggest enemy because I was so insecure about my calling. And the board really invested in me here in Johnston County. And they said, we see probably what you don't see yet. We're going to get you a spiritual mentor, you know, a professional coach. We're going to invest in you. And we've never revisited that insecure Rachel again. Praise God. It's just been, he did call me here. And he did put me at this table, you know, young and naive and hopelessly naive and optimistic, thinking that, you know, we're charging hell with a water pistol. Just so much of that still resonates in my bones. But I would say the transition through the pandemic for me, you know, being the only one on staff here, not having a lot of foundation under my feet, was really just how do we reach more students? If they're not on the school campus, what do we do there? And I think that's where God really settled in my calling. That's your call, is to reach the unreached with the gospel. And you can be more effective doing that if you multiply, you know, those laborers. And so working on training and relationship building. And then where we are now is, I feel like we're in the exceedingly abundantly of Ephesians 3:20. I feel like we're just sitting there, and it's been a hard year. You know, 2023, we faced extreme opposition from some different groups all over the United States. And walking through that, thinking, God, did you really call us here just to do this? And why us? And why now? We're coming out of the pandemic, you know, we're trying to build it back up, not see it torn down. And really that got my attention probably to the legality and the importance of working closely in healthy relationships with our local administration and board of education, and making sure that they know that we're not here to cause problems, that we're here to help them and serve them. And then where we are now is we're headed into two new counties. We have 46 clubs. We have about 4,500 students attending clubs a month. We just celebrated 216 salvations this year, which for us is huge because, you know, we don't just count numbers if they check them on a card. We want to make sure that somebody has had a follow-up conversation with that student. Every 216 students have had a follow-up conversation. Do you go to church? Do you need to get baptized? Do you need resources? Do you have questions? Yep. And so it's important that we can say that we have not left any of those 216 kind of stranded on their own. And we have a staff of 7 or 8 now. I mean, I was at a church last night in a brand new county sharing the mission and vision. And I thought, they were like, you are so good at this. I said, no, I love this. I love this. I can't believe I get to do this. That's what you're seeing. It's not that I'm good at it. It's that I love it. Yeah. And overall, I would say first priority, really what I see the most is the Lord has just used it to strengthen my weaknesses and further identify my strengths. So teaching and speaking, I joke with everyone, I'm a great public speaker, because if you can teach high school students, you can do just about anything. Yep. They are the roughest crowd. You know, they're like laughing at you and snickering and drawing pictures of you. And so I'm like, give me a church and a congregation anytime, I can go share the vision with you. Yeah. So I see how he used teaching to prepare me and to give me a heart to be where I am now. And we're just in that growing stage where I'm like, okay, Lord, what's next? And we've come to the conclusion that if somebody, anybody wants to share the gospel, if they want help, if they want first priority, we're saying yes. We're saying yes on faith and meeting them where we are. And so that's how Wake County kind of got jumped in with us, is that's an opportunity. We're going to say yes. And Wilson County and Wayne County, you guys are excited. You want it. We're saying yes. And we just celebrated 10 years of being here, which feels incredible. And we celebrated that with a benefit dinner that was just, everybody said it was a holy experience, which I feel so honored to even be a part of that a fundraiser could be also be called a holy experience. And it was very successful. So really in the exceedingly abundantly, and also in the, the next 10 years, it's just going to keep going.
Where could this go? And I can only imagine Phil's conversation when you start talking about expansion. And I mean, he's a visionary executive vice president type. He's the chairman of your board. You know, he was talking with Joel about expansion, because Joel was that type also. The two peas in the pod, you know, burst out of the pod more quickly than they might have, might should have. But yeah, to see the healthiness of your organization, and Phil investing in you through the years, but now him to come back to that, hey, where can we expand around the state? I'm sure he's super excited. Tickled pink is what comes to mind as the thing there, that, hey, this is humbling and amazing just to see, where God has taken us, and let's ride that wave. So thank you.
He said recently that, or I said at our benefit dinner, actually, I got to do a Q&A with him. And I said, he's more passionate now, 10 years into this as a board president, than he was when I first met him. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's absolutely true. You know, his daughters are still leaders at a local school. Yeah. And so he gets to hear the stories. They're coming home at the kitchen table and they're like, you don't even know what God just did in the middle of our gym today. Yeah. And he's like, oh, like I get to be a part of that. And I tell him all the time, I don't know. I think he's just like me. He'll be doing this for the rest of his life in some way or another. He just loves it so much.
Yep. I agree. Those are the good people to have around, the lifers.
Mm-hmm. Great people.
Yes, they are. Well, thanks for joining us today and letting us glimpse into your life and the conversation. Congrats on the new baby boy. Super excited to continue to hear that story, in addition to Wake and Wayne and Wilson and all that God has in store for you. For those staffers that are out there listening, because I get, you and I have said this before, it's not just your staff that come to you as a director and say, hey, you know, did you hear this? What would you have to say to the other staffers around the country that are maybe discouraged today or listening in, looking for that good word? Close us out with a good word for the staff that are around the country, the volunteers.
Yeah, I think what I needed to hear, and in those moments, I still have those moments, what I would want to hear is, where are you keeping your eyes? Where are you looking? If I get too bogged down in the, I got to get to another church, I got to launch another club, I got to reach as many students, if I get too focused on the human statistics and goal setting, and I forget that this is Christ's work, this is what he died to do. Nobody loves this more than him. I don't care how passionate you are. I'll never outlove evangelism more than Jesus Christ, who gave his life for it. And so when I remember that, I remember who's on our team, who's leading us along the way. And I remember he's going to do this, whether my goals get met, whether the funds are there, whether the clubs get launched, whether the students come, he's going to want to do this. It's his work. And I think I would just say to them, continue to exchange, you know, your human perspective for his heavenly perspective on this. He loves this more. And if you continue to put that where it's supposed to be, I think you'll last. You'll be a lifer.
Well, thank you for being on today and giving that encouragement to all those out there working the first priority out in the trenches. I know that they are encouraged. Just encouraged by your friendship and where you're going. Love to hear the story. We'll have to have you on again sooner than we did last time.
Please, I'm honored to be here. I have so much fun. So thank you guys.
That's awesome. Well, to everybody listening, thanks for tuning in today. Please share this with those that you're around. That helps get the word out and that helps start the next school down the street, get the next person involved, the next church, whoever that might be. So thanks for being a part of it. Thanks for listening in and hope you have a great week. We'll see you next week.